Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out of town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Splitsville Luxury Lanes, Patriot Place, right outside Gillette Stadium. Gasper and Murray, live on location, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So we're on location for the ceremony that's going to take place later this afternoon. I think 4 o'clock. As a former left tackle, Patriots left tackle, Matt Light, going to be inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. From what I've been told, he is slated to join the show sometime between now and 2 when we get off the air. We'll hopefully talk to him. But I do want to focus back on tomorrow's game, Chris, the unfamiliar territory that the New England Patriots find themselves in at this quarter pole of the NFL season. I think it's a must-win scenario that they're looking at tomorrow against this Miami Dolphins team, the 3-0 Miami Dolphins. And it's based on the simple math of the AFC East. If the Dolphins win this game tomorrow, Patriots looking up at them, behind them, 3 full games. They'll have a short week against an Indianapolis Colts team that's improved defensively. Seemed like they've been a tough out the last couple of weeks against the Redskins and the Philadelphia Eagles. That's going to be followed by another primetime game against this Kansas City Chiefs team that offensively has looked like an absolute juggernaut behind Pat Mahomes. And they just find themselves in a real tough spot. And as I said earlier today, if any team is going to bounce back and get out of this dark hole that they are seemingly in the last couple of weeks, it is the Patriots. Time and again, that they have done this over the last near 20 years under Brady Belichick. But I'm in full Big Jim worry mode because just how ugly it's been, especially last Sunday. You typically get that bounce back. The Patriots, it's a Matt Patricia coach team. Bill doesn't typically lose to his underlings like that.
Yeah.
And not only lose, but embarrassed.
Back-to-back double-digit losses. You don't see that.
Yeah, and especially defensively, pushed around, giving up 5 yards of carry. That front seven, again, looked like a mess. The linebackers look bad in pass coverage. Again, the second cornerback, whether it's Jason McCourty or it's Eric Rowe, they look lost. It just
did you like Keon Crossan's one snap there?
That's another one. What are you doing on the field? Like him and Cyrus Jones being back. I swear, it's like they do this just to spite me. Like, is it gotten this bad that these guys are actually getting playing time? Ugh.
Let's see what they do. But I mentioned this to you before. Of all the years to keep two sort of fringy cornerbacks, you know, one guy's a late round pick and Crossan, and the other guy's undrafted. They're going up against, you didn't have joint practices, and they're going up against your receivers every day. And that's the day you end up keeping two. That's a little shaky. Like, these guys got to prove something to me based on that, because you haven't really seen them against, I don't want to say real competition, that's not fair, but you haven't seen them against the caliber of competition that they will need to succeed against to be worth those roster spots.
Well, like Kenny Stills, you know, or something like that they're going to see this weekend.
Or Danny Amendola.
Right. Right. Old friend Danny Amendola. It's a tough spot that they're in, and I'll tell you, look, you tend to be a little bit more of a harsher critic, obviously, when you work with Felgrid Mazz, and you get to do this for a living, but that's how I am as a fan anyway.
The negativity just seeps in.
Well, and I've always, you know me.
Yeah, you have a dark soul.
I a dark soul. I'm a drastic fan, for better or worse.
Yeah.
And even if they win tomorrow, Chris, and it looks, I'm still not going to be any less freaked out. And I remember in 2009. The last time they had an ugly two-game losing streak like this, they go down to New Orleans, they get it pushed in against the Saints on a Monday night. They look outclassed. The next week, it's a competitive game in Miami, but they ended up losing that, I think, 23-22.
Oh, Chad Henne went off in that game. He was great. He threw the ball like 52 times.
They come back here, and I remember hating this game like poison. They come back here, they play a 1 o'clock game against the Carolina Panthers, who start Matt Moore.
Yeah.
And Brady throws for like $180, and they win it 20-10.
Yeah.
And I just remember having this awful taste in my mouth, like that.
Like, this team's not going to do anything.
That was after that game where my good buddy Burt Breer got Carolina Panthers guys, including Chris Gamble, to say that Randy Moss quit.
Right, that's right,
And that was where Bill went into the whole stats are for losers, scoreboard's for winners.
Yeah. That's right. So even if they win this
You're in my wheelhouse now.
Oh, I hated that.
Because I was still on the beat, so.
And Chris, that team, even though they ended up finishing 10-6, my expectations were minimal at best for them in the playoffs. And obviously, we remember how god-awful that wild card loss was to the Baltimore Ravens, where it was over in 5 minutes.
Ray Rice is still right.
Even if they win this game tomorrow, and it's an ugly win like that, and it's shades of that Carolina game from 09, like, I'm not going to feel any better. Like, I need to see crisp Patriot football, top to bottom, both sides of the ball, all three phases tomorrow.
The one thing I will say that I take some solace in, and obviously the back-to-back losses, and it was disappointing, not just the result, but the way that they played, both those games were on the road. And so now they're at home, they're at Gillette, and obviously they lost at Gillette last year, the season opener to Kansas City. But I do take some solace in the fact that it's at home. And I think that they will be more organized. I don't think you'll see some of those mistakes, some of those miscues. I think that they will be better. And I also think there's a little bit of a mental block for Miami about coming up here and winning. I mean, they haven't done it since 2008. So Ryan Tannehill's never done it. You know, the Dolphins play great against the Patriots down in South Florida. Up here, it's a little different story. And I think if you can get the momentum going in your direction, that doubt starts to creep back in for the Dolphins. I know the Patriots have harped on this, but I think more than any other week to this point, a fast start is important. You do not want to give the Dolphins belief. The idea that these aren't the same Patriots, these guys can be had. You don't want to give them that. And if you can come out and score in the first possession, put 14 points on the board in the first quarter, and make the Dolphins chase you a little bit, then the Dolphins are mentally, it's human nature. It's going to be, here we go again. Here in Foxborough.
If you want to join the Patriots conversation, 617-779-0985. It is amazing you mentioned, and we talked to Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins, earlier today, getting his perspective on it. It's amazing that it's been 10 years since that wild card game. It's
Wildcat game.
Oh, the Wildcat game, yeah. It's 10 years almost to the day. That was week 3 of 08, the Matt Castle year, when Brady went down. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, what? I can't believe that this is happening. Because that was, you know, Ronnie Brown was the star of the day. Joey Porter harassing Matt Castle all day. But in talking to Armando, if you missed the interview earlier, and he wrote about this in the Miami Herald, he does expect to see some kind of trickery.
Yeah, some trickeration.
Yeah, from the Dolphins tomorrow. And, again, with this defense, the way it's looked the last couple of weeks, like, man, they're going to have all their ducks in a row tomorrow for this team. Because while I don't think that they're a strong 3-0, the Dolphins, they're dangerous. And I think that they have to be looking at this and saying, this isn't their de facto Super Bowl, kind of like how the Jaguars treated that Week 2 game down there. But they get a real stranglehold on the AFC East if they come up here and stun them tomorrow.
Well, again, you know, and I don't want to get too much into the armchair psychology of athletes in professional football, but I'm going to dip my toe into it a little bit. The last 2 weeks, who do you think those games meant more to?
The Jags and the Lions. Yeah,
definitely.
You know, you're right there.
And I think this week, who does the game mean more to?
The Dolphins.
I think it means more to the Patriots.
You do? Okay.
Coming off back-to-back defeats, staring down a 3-game losing streak at home. You know,
I think you can make a case
people like you with the pitchforks and the torches encircling Gillette Stadium. The Dolphins are 3-0.
Yeah.
We're riding high. And they say, oh, we'll get these guys later in the year down south like we always do.
I just think it would mean a lot to them if they were to come up here and stomp on them and essentially.
Who's the more desperate team?
The Patriots are certainly the more desperate team.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Okay. I think the more desperate teams for the victory the last couple of weeks have not been the Patriots. It's been the Patriots' opponent. This week, I think the Patriots are the more desperate team, and I do think that matters somewhat in the NFL.
Dan in Cranston, you're up here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Dan.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
All right, I'll make it quick. The thing about the Patriots is I think that is the problems with them are way beyond X's and O's. I don't think enough people are taking that into factor because I'm not saying they're going to go 6-10, okay? But everybody says that if they lose tomorrow, this is the end. What exactly would be the end? You know what I mean? Like, is it 9-7? Is it 8-8? It's just, I think that the two leaders on this team, there are too many things happening. When Gronk was confirming that he was basically on the block, in the middle of, not the middle of the season, but, you know, something he had denied all summer, he's not happy. Brady's clearly not happy. There's a bad vibe going around that locker room. I'm not there, but it seems like it's been a weird preseason. It's been a weird offseason, and it's just carrying over. I just think this team is so dysfunctional. And this is, whatever the end is, there's so many unpatriot things like going on right now. This is, to me, the beginning of the end of the way we know them.
Well, Dan, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, to what you're saying, I think if they were to lose this game tomorrow, so what's the end? Yeah, they could still finish 10-6 and 11-5. They could, because, you know, like, there's almost near automatic wins in Buffalo and in the Jets in this division, even though they look improved and the Bills stunned Minnesota last week. But either way, you'd see more ugliness. You have Rob Gronkowski at the end of last week's game admitting, yeah, they tried to trade me. You'd see more sniping back and forth between these factions, and I do think that there's factions. There's Team Tom. There's Team Bill. You'd see more stupidity on the field. I think one of the things Dan's mentioning, or at least I'm going to assume here, one of the things that's kind of blown my mind these last couple of weeks in these losses, Chris, you see stupidity on the field, things you don't see from a Belichick coach team in the past. Jaguars, they don't snap the ball on, or touch the lineman to try to get the offsides when he's in the neutral zone on that fourth and short punt. 12 men on the field last week against Detroit, and it was 12 men on the field.
12 guys aligned in a defense. Yeah.
So I think, and to me, that's a tune-out factor. Or the message isn't getting through from Belichick to the players. If they lose tomorrow, what does the end mean? I think more stupidity and ugliness like that, both on and off the field.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think his larger point was, if it's the end, well, you know it's the end. In other words, you know, it's going to be... Is it going to be a rapid decline? Would you go from being the New England Patriots, who have played in the last two Super Bowls, and start the year trying to become only the third team to advance to at least three straight Super Bowls, and go from that to 6-10? Or do you go from that to like 10-6 and a first-round playoff exit, and then, you know, the next year you're 9-7, and then it's over? I think that's sort of what he was getting at. For me, I'm trying – you know, we've all been through this so many times, and I'm trying to temper – my trepidation about the team and say, okay, we haven't even seen like the real offense yet, which to me will be when Edelman comes back.
Sure.
I do have a feeling, I'll say this, I do have a feeling that this is trending in the direction of more of a 2005, 2009 type of year where they're going to, you know, be okay. They'll win the division and they'll be in the playoffs, but it's not one of their best teams and you're going out in the first or second round of the playoffs. It does have that feel to it from both a talent standpoint and just the vibe in terms of what's going on behind the scenes and in the background for the team.
That 0-9 team, that is so. I'm thinking about that Carolina game, and I forgot about the Breer Moss.
Yeah,
the Panthers player saying that Moss quit. Oh, that team at the end too. And they had the blowout win here against Jacksonville. Then they go to Houston. Welker gets hurt. Ugh.
Oh God, that was really bad.
You could smell the funk emanating from that team this year, and you kind of get a little bit through the first 3 weeks with this team too. We have to touch on the Red Sox. I want to get your thoughts, Chris, okay, on that team and their state of the rotation heading into the playoffs, because I think there's some concern there as they're wrapping up the final regular season series against the New York Yankees over at Fenway Park. Game 2 going on right now. But we'll come back and talk Sox right after this here on Gasper Murray, live from Splitsville in Foxborough.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It seems like there's something mechanically going on. He's not firing his hips the way he usually does. So, I mean, we don't have too much time, so he'll work on it this weekend. Probably Monday he'll throw like an aggressive bullpen and see where he's at, and we go from there.
Yeah, no, it's not the time to panic. 107 wins into the season and October ahead of us, so... you know, it is what it is. You take it in stride and try to build off of it and try to get better.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 is Sports Hub, coming to you live from Splitsville. Right outside Gillette Stadium here in Foxborough. Here for the Matt Light induction ceremony as he goes to the Patriots Hall of Fame later this afternoon. So, that was Red Sox manager Alex Cora, followed by Chris Sale. After his start the other night, in which, okay, his last ramp-up start, all right, the velocity not good. It's just, no. let's be blunt here. A concern, it's his the lowest miles per hour on a fastball that he's had in his career. Alex Cora sounded a little bit, I don't know, jarred, I guess. I don't know what word I'm looking for.
I would say, you know, disconcerting.
Yeah, he was concerned, I think, to say the least, after that game. And I found it, you know, pretty telling that he said, we don't have a lot of time here as they head into the divisional round of the MLB playoffs. Game 1, now less than a week away, next Friday night. Well, we don't know the time yet, but I'm assuming Friday night if it ends up being the New York Yankees, if they end up beating the A's in that wild card game. But your thoughts on the rotation heading into the ALDS here, Chris, because to me, and I said this last night on NBC Sports Boston and Boston Sports Tonight, the one guy that really looks good right now is the guy that's going today, Nathan Eovaldi. The rest of the rotation looks heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you end up playing the Yankees, if the Yankees prevail over the A's in that one-game wild-card playoff, Eovaldi has very good numbers against the Yankees. He's pitched well against them, so he would be somebody that you would feel good about sending out there in the playoffs. It is concerning to see what's happening with Sale. His inability, I think, to build back up to where he was. Forget about before we knew about the shoulder inflammation. He's not even back to where he was when he came back the first time on August the 12th and went five innings and struck out 12 guys. I mean, the stuff's not as good. It's still good stuff, but it's not what it was before. And he's the guy that you probably feel the best about or felt the best about before the shoulder inflammation cropped up at the end of July, early August, going into the playoffs in your rotation. Because I think Rick Porcello skates, really, in terms of his failures in the playoffs. People don't look at that, and we all know what the situation is with David Price, winless in nine playoff starts, and then down the stretch here, he hasn't looked good in his last couple of starts. Suddenly the gopher ball is an issue for David Price. So I think it all starts with Chris Sale, and when you look at that opener, when they play game one of the ALDS, you just don't know what to expect from Sale. He could go seven innings, strike out 10 guys, throw 100 pitches and be great, and it's like, you know what, that was the fifth start, and he just needed to the fifth start to get back, because that's what I thought it would take, about five starts, and this next one will be the fifth one. Or he could go out there and labor through four and a third and give up three runs, three earned, and now you have to go to the bullpen, and that puts you in at a disadvantage. That, you know, that's not an advantageous situation for you at that point. And so if you're the Red Sox, you want to go into this thing with as many certainties as you can, right? And now all of a sudden your ace, a guy you should be able to count upon, is a question mark.
Well, if he looks the former, that will speak to some of the things I've heard this week about, you know, what he looked like in that last start. He's holding back, and you know, they want to use him. He'll be at full strength when they open up this thing next week. He's holding back against the Orioles. And to that I say, you know, you're just fooling yourself for two reasons. One, when he came back the last time with the shoulder inflammation, it was against the same team, the Orioles.
Yeah, and he lit him up.
And he lit him up to the tune of 12 strikeouts.
Struck out 12 guys on 68 pitches.
So he wasn't holding back. He would have wanted to prove it. And he wants to get that velocity up, not down. He's not trying to hold back on purpose. And then the other thing, you have Alex Cora after that game talking about how the hips look out of whack on Chris Sale. When I hear that, Chris, I'm no doctor, but I know enough about sports and having watched them all my life that when coaches or players start talking about like things like that, you're overcompensating for an injury that you're dealing with. Sale is dealing with something. I don't know how you can't be alarmed about this.
Well, here's the other thing. Let's say it is just mechanics, right? And it's not really directly related to the shoulder. Let's just say, hypothetically, that they're right. This is still a guy who has a history of breaking down in terms of just simple wear and tear, like not even an injury. Just, you know, and they micromanaged him all season long. And, yeah, I know he missed a bunch of times, so he should be fine after missing that time. But what if it's just as simple as sort of like fatigue, and he's just not going to have – even if he gets the hips firing, he's not going to have the same stuff.
Oh, you can't be surprised there either, because he's built like a popsicle stick.
I was going to say, I heard you say this the other day. It's the same. It's basically the same thing, but I was like, Jim, please say he's built like a tongue depressor.
Right, because it's fatter up top. I got what you mean. Matt McCarthy, who's here engineering this broadcast today, five-tool player for 98.5 of Sports Hub, also hosts Hardcore Baseball. Check out that podcast on 98.5sportshub.com. What's your feeling on the rotation going to the ALDS right now?
You should be deeply concerned. I mean, I don't know how you can't be concerned about what you've seen first and foremost from your ace guys. I mean, 7 to 10 miles an hour off the fastball, like, that's not all mechanics. I'm sorry. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the velocity was down for Chris Sale in the back-to-back starts where he pitched on regular rest. You got a situation here where this guy is struggling to recover in between his starts. So maybe he'll be fine to go with 8 days rest for game one of the ALDS. I hope so. What's he going to look like on normal rest? Or what's he going to look like, God forbid, if you have to go to him on short rest? Every other team that you feel like has a legitimate chance to win a World Series, like the Indians, Corey Kluber, could they go to him and say, season's on the line, we need you on short rest?
Yes.
He could do it on 3 days rest.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander, could he do it on 3 days rest?
Yes.
John Lester, could he do it on 3 days
yes.
rest? Can Chris Sale do it on 3 days
no.
rest? Could he do it on regular rest?
I don't
That's
so.
The problem. David Price is more built for it physically. Not mentally, though.
Well, you'll remember this because you're a Seamhead, so you mentioned Kluber. I think he's a good comp for this right now and what Sale's dealing with. Remember, his back flared up going to the ALDS last year against the Yankees. He's their ace, and he got lit up to the tune of like six runs in that first start of that game. Of that series. So, you know, worst case scenario, it ends up looking like that. I'll ask you both. Matt, I'll start with you. Who would you rather see, the A's or the Yankees?
A's, because I think the Yankees are just more talented. Either way, though, you should beat those teams. You're better than both of them, even with the concerns that you have right now. But the Yankees have a much higher ceiling. Like, I know the A's kind of have that it factor. I can't buy in on their pitching. I know they crush bullpens. They hit a lot of home runs. They've got a good bullpen themselves. Like,
yeah, the bullpen's really
good. I couldn't tell you who's going to start the wild card game for them.
Probably Mike Fiers.
Mike Fiers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody like that.
Who got beat down the other day. They did the opener thing, and Fiers came in afterwards. He gave up six runs.
Just not a talented enough team. The Yankees have more talent. I think they've got a lot of problems, but the Yankees have more talent.
Chris?
Who would you rather see? If you're the Red Sox, I think you'd rather see the A's. They're just not as good. And now you see that home run last night by Aaron Judge, and now Gary Sanchez is starting to come around for the Yankees. If that's the case with the Yankees and their health, they can match you blow for blow offensively. You've hit well against their bullpen, which is good because I think they have a better bullpen than you do, but you've been able to hit well against that. And then the starting pitching to me is a wash, not from a talent standpoint, but just because you don't know what you're going to get from either team. The Red Sox starters are clearly better and more talented, but they haven't performed in the postseason, and now you have Sale with an injury situation. So I would rather face the A's. You know, they're going to throw Edwin Jackson in a playoff series as a starter. Bring on the A's. Bring me the A's.
I know Maz thinks I'm nuts, and you probably, both of you probably will too. The Yankees, I think despite the lineup, you see Judge hit that bomb last night, guys like Stanton obviously. I just think that they're infected with stupidity and poor play, and that starts with Aaron Boone, and especially Gary Sanchez, who he continues to play. How many pass balls does he have this year?
Incredible.
17 or something like that?
I'm insulted as a baseball fan watching him catch every single night. I mean, that is awful. Look at the ninth inning last night for the Yankees. That's the perfect example of why I don't think they're going far in October. They commit too many errors. They're just systematically stupid.
Zach Britton.
They really are.
They're fundamentally
left-handed Gagne.
Yeah. When it comes, they're a fundamentally unsound team. Andujar is a butcher at third base, although your guy, Devers, is right next to him as a butcher, to be honest. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I see what you're saying there, and I think the difference in a series like that is could be that the Red Sox have the last at-bat. They have home field. But I'm telling you, just a pure talent standpoint. And remember now, the Yankees are a team, and I know there's young guys on there like Gleyber Torres and Andujar who weren't part of it last year, but the Yankees went to Game 7 of the ALCS. They have confidence that they can perform in the playoffs. They don't have a monkey on their back like the Red Sox do in that first round. So that could make a difference, too. That's a team that has some playoff. They know that they can win in the playoffs.
In a short series, they might be able to mask the stupidity. Like, I think you get them into a seven-game series, and they'll get exposed. But in a short series, guys, like, anything can happen. If they steal game one, all of a sudden David Price out there against the Yankees for game two, you could be looking at it. And, again, that would be different in a seven-game series type of format. In a five-game series, they scare me a little bit just because of the talent.
All right, I want to go back to the Patriots because one of the players we have yet to talk about during the show at all today, Chris, is Josh Gordon. Is he going to get on the field tomorrow? Tom Brady was asked about him at his press conference yesterday. We'll talk about Josh Gordon in this Pats game. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. We've got a half hour to go here on Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Anytime you incorporate players, and that's just, there's a process that you go through, and you're trying to get familiar with different players and what they do, and we've incorporated quite a few this year, and just try to do the best you can.
From Splitsville Luxury Lanes, Patriot Place, right outside Gillette Stadium, Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady asked yesterday about Josh Gordon, how he's progressing with the offense, and you get another vague answer, talking about how we're all, you know, deep into the playbook and ready for the game and blah, blah, blah. Like, nothing specific about Josh Gordon, who's now been here a couple of weeks and has yet to actually play in a game. He's on the injury list again with the hamstring. We have an update of sorts, courtesy of our own Mark the Beetle Bertrand, who just tweeted minutes ago. It was followed up by a tweet by Scott Zolak, who you can hear on the broadcast with Bob Soucy, the Patriots game tomorrow here on the Sports Hub. Beetle tweeting, I will be surprised if Josh Gordon plays tomorrow. I think his hammy is still an issue. Zolak followed that with agree. Then he deleted it, but I screen capped it and I tweeted it anyway. Can't beat that. So it doesn't sound like Gordon's going to be playing. What the hell's going on with this guy, Chris? Do you really believe it is the hamstring? Could it be something else, considering the checkered past of the player? They're trying to get him right mentally. What is going on with Josh Gordon? When do you think we actually see him?
I think it's one of those situations where there probably is an injury, but it's really about trying to give him as much time as possible to get up to speed. And whenever he plays, it's going to be a fairly limited package, right? So if they can get some of the basics down with him, they have a Thursday night game coming up. So it would be a tough turn for him. He plays in this game, come back on a Thursday. You can exercise some caution with the injury by keeping him out of this one and getting ready for Thursday. And you also buy him more time to just get down the basics and sort of digest whatever the game plan will be for the Colts. Because I think they also know, and I think we all know this with Brady, your first impression goes a long way. And if this guy's first impression is he doesn't know what the hell to do, then it's going to be tough because it sounds like it's already an uphill battle with Tom for him to buy in on this guy.
I was into the move. I thought he would have gotten a little bit of action in the Detroit game, even if it was just as almost a decoy just to pull away some of the defense from a player like Rob Gronkowski and maybe even Philip Dorsett. Obviously, that didn't happen. But if he didn't play tomorrow, Chris, I'm really going to start to question this and why they didn't end up taking a harder look at a guy like Dez Bryant.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think that's legitimate.
Is it what? It's just because of the money? Like, that's
yeah,
annoying.
I mean, money's a factor. I know my colleague Ben Volen tweeted today they're pretty tight up against the cap. There's ways of maneuvering that. Obviously, Belichick said it himself. As we all know, cap space can be maneuvered in a number of ways.
Yeah, well, don't give $3.25 million to a player like Dwayne Allen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I think Gordon has more upside. He's in the prime of his career. He's a better player than Dez is at this point. But I was all about bringing Dez in because I felt like there's nothing to lose. And if you're not bringing Dez in because you feel like he might be disruptive and not reliable, then whoa, you've cornered the market on that with Gordon. Not that he's a disruptive personality, but just the fact that you're not sure you can count on the guy is disruptive in its own regard.
It's annoying. It's annoying if it's a hamstring thing or if it's something else that's off the field because of, again, the troubled past with the player. And look, when he's right, he's infinitely talented. I do believe what, you know, analysts who will know more about football or will forget more about football than I'll ever know in my life say that he's as talented as a Randy Moss type or an A.J. Green. I do believe that. Hell, he even saw that in that first game he got in with the Browns against the Steelers this year, the touchdown grab he made. It's like, oof, man, he is nasty. But there's so many other bad intangibles with the player. And now, is it a physical thing? Like, it's just, this has felt like a bit of a waste thus far, and an area of need, desperate.
Well, it feels a little bit to me like, you know, Bill's playing the long game in terms of if this guy's going to succeed here, we have to make sure that we have him indoctrinated into our program, you know, in terms of the offense, and that even though Bill wouldn't speak to what they plan to do to keep the guy on the straight and narrow, it's pretty clear, like, that's really important. So they have to do that, too, and get him set up, try and do that, put him in the best position to succeed, because if he can have success right off the bat, it will create confidence for him. It will inspire confidence in him in terms of with the quarterback, and that will help. If it goes awry that first game, you know, Gordon might get down on himself, and Brady will write him off fast because Brady just has no time. You know, Brady's the typical guy. I mean, at this point in his career, you know, he's the woman sort of putting the hand up like, I got no time. I got no time for your trifling behind. That's Brady at this point.
Give me your assessment on Brandon Cooks. I mean, yeah. A lot of people are now rethinking that trade because he's been such a weapon for the LA Rams. You see that Thursday night in their win over the Vikings. I know you were higher on him than I was. I thought his time here was just okay.
Fine. Someone used that word. It's like he was fine.
But to see how he was used, here's the second guess, right? And I think you had brought this up before, and rightfully so, and I poo-pooed it at the time because I'm a jerk. What you've seen and how he's looked with the Rams, it could have looked here if Julian Edelman didn't get hurt. And that's what's frustrating because they have a real stud in that Cooper Kupp there, a lot of offensive weapons.
And Robert Woods will go over the middle and run a lot of those underneath routes, and he's good at that. Robert Woods is.
So it is frustrating to see it look like that, and it's like, man, you know, if Edelman didn't get hurt. Because Cooks was looked at as the one last year, and I don't necessarily think he's number one.
Not in this system, at least, because he can't run the full catalog of routes as well as they'd want a number one to run him. And you saw that against Miami last year when he ran that, you know, I look like an out route to me, but whatever it was technically, and it got picked off, you know, he's not as good at that stuff. Now, there are other routes he's very good at. You know, anything that's vertical or the seam, you know, that's really good. You know, the deep end cut, all that stuff. He's good at that stuff, and that's what's happening with the Rams offense, and he's part of a trio of receivers that are really good. The other thing that I think hurt Cooks last year was that you had Danny Amendola on a little bit of a pitch count so they could make sure that he made it to the postseason. So, look, I still think Cooks could have helped him. I understand why they traded him, because they weren't going to re-sign him. They weren't going to pay him the money that he got and the $80 million extension he got over 5 years from the Rams. But it's not a good look when you see the way he's playing there and you're dying for playmakers or wide receivers.
I said it yesterday on Phil Ramaz. The thing that frustrates me more, because Cooks, I was okay with moving on from, and I thought it was a better, numerically, I like the trade that they got picked number 23. Now looking back, I don't know if I necessarily wanted them to take a guard in Isaiah Wynn, but be that as it may, the thing that's frustrated me more, Chris, is this team's inability to find and draft a talented wide receiver. That Cooper Kupp, they could have had him last year in the third round, but they played the shell game with picks so they could get Coney Ealy, who doesn't end up making the team.
Yeah.
And then Calvin Ridley, who's looked like an absolute stud.
Yes.
I thought he was the best wide receiver, and he was the second receiver taken out of Alabama in this year's draft. He's looked great for the Falcons. He goes between Wynn and Sony Michel, and it's just like...
Yeah, he went 26. Wynn was 23. You could have taken him. And to me, they've never drafted a receiver in the first round while Belichick's been here. They just don't value that position in terms of putting the capital into it, whether it's draft capital or financial capital. And the other thing is, if you're not going to draft Calvin Ridley, and I'm not saying he's a perfect, you know, receiver, don't get me wrong, but here's a guy who played for Saban at Alabama, was a stud from his freshman year on. His offensive coordinator last year was Brian Daboll, who has been on your staff and coached in the NFL and been an offensive coordinator. If you're not going to take that guy...
Like, you get... Those are all your guys. You can get the intel on
exactly.
a player like that.
If you're not going to take that guy, then you're just not going to... You're not going to take anybody. Or you just don't know what a good receiver is in the first round. You're back to Jonathan Baldwin and Julio Jones are the same player. I mean, that might be the real problem.
So, again, Mark the Beetle Bertrand, who you can hear in the post pre and post game tomorrow. Pre with Gasper, post with me here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. He tweeted just a short time ago, "I will be surprised if Josh Gordon plays tomorrow. I think his hammy is still an issue." And our own Scott Zolak doubled down on that as well. So,
did he, though? Did he? You said he deleted it.
Well, he deleted it, but then he ended up putting up something else there, too.
Oh,
but,
okay. What was the other one?
I
love Zoe in real time. It's always interesting.
Yeah, I know. Let's see. What did he write?
The real time thought process
like trending
of Zoe
that
is fantastic.
Way, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, trending the other way, I think.
He must have gotten a call.
That's trending down.
I feel like Zoe got a call on the bat phone that said, no bueno on this tweet here.
Yeah, so there you go. Doesn't sound like we're going to see Josh Gordon in what I think is a must-win for the Patriots against the Dolphins tomorrow. Our final segment coming up next. Looks like we're going to be doing our usual thing. Five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports unless Matt Light shows up in the next 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes. That's next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 of Sports Hub.
Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too whack.
All right, it's how we wrap up the show each and every week. As long as Chris is here, we got the time. Five questions for Chris Gasper that have nothing to do with sports. It is Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, coming to you from Splitsville here outside of Gillette Stadium, Patriot Place. All right, question number one, Chris. It was announced this week that Dunkin' Donuts dropping the donuts from their name to reflect their increasing emphasis on coffee and other drinks. Your thoughts on going strictly Dunkin'? A lot of people up in arms about this. It's not Dunkin' Donuts anymore. It's just Dunkin'. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't think it's going to last. I think it's a branding mistake. I think it's akin to, like, New Coke. It's not going to work. They'll be back to Dunkin' Donuts in, like, a year.
Same great products. It's just a name change. People got to calm down. If they change the name of this show, Chris, to C&J in the afternoons, you still get the great content. Sure, the name ain't all that great, and it sounds top 40-ish, but you still get Gasper and Murray.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. People like it the way that they like it, especially in this part of the country. People don't like change, and I think it's going to bother them. I think it's a mistake. I do. I don't think that they should embark upon this, and I think that they will end up ultimately changing it back. And also, how will future generations of New England children misspell donut in a spelling bee if it's not Dunkin' Donuts.
I hate when they put the GH in it like it's, you know, like it's supposed to be. I like D-O-N-U-T-S because that's how I grew up with it. I like it. I have no problem with it. Question number two. A Maine restaurant owner experimenting with getting lobsters high at the customer's request before boiling them. This is true. This owner believes it's more humane than the traditional method. The THC doesn't actually impact the edible lobster meat. Is this lady crazy or is she onto something here?
I think she's onto something. I'm down with it. Anything that makes it less painful for the lobsters to be, I don't know, boiled alive, I'm down for that.
I am a man full of contradictions, Chris, as you know. I like animals more than people.
Yes.
But like boiling lobsters, whatever. They're sea bugs and they're delicious.
Oh, my God.
Like,
you
I
are the worst. You don't recycle. Now you're saying basically just kill these things. I don't care if they feel any pain.
Here's how you deal with the lobsters before you boil them. If you ever want to be humane, you take a steak knife and you stick it through their brain, and then you throw them in the boiling pot. That's the humane thing to do. Kill it before it cooks itself to death.
So let me ask you, Jim, because I know you've been known to enjoy from time to time.
Yeah.
You know? So if you had a choice, you know, they somehow you were a prisoner, and they said, look, we can either, like, have you get, you know, really, really high, and then we're going to kill you, or we can just put a steak knife through your brain right now.
No,
steak knife?
Put the steak knife through my brain. Kill, bang and get it over with.
Okay.
I'll tell you, so it's weird lately, too. I have my medical card, so I can talk about this legally. I've been getting, like, the freaks, like, lately. I don't know what's going on. I get, like, paranoid lately, and I do that. I'll put it to you this way. I would never smoke before I got on an airplane. I would, I get, like, an anxiety thing going on.
Okay, really?
So I think if that were to happen, if I was, you know, Big Jim Lobster, and you smoked me up before I went in the pot, I'd be like, ah, I'm going to cook to death, and then this fat guy's going to eat me. I'm going to be drowned in butter. Ah! So, no.
Okay.
Knife through the skull.
Fair.
Question number three. You know, we've told many a funny story on the show about things that we do to hotel room curtains,
yeah,
other things.
Oh,
well, that's
God.
More me than you.
Ugh.
But if you haven't thought about where your produce has been before you buy it, now you will. In what was allegedly a YouTube prank, a man in Virginia rubbed produce all over his keister in a grocery store and then put it back. Since then, the store has had to destroy several pallets of produce after this incident. Should this man have to pay the store back for all the damage he caused?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I jail this man, too. I agree. Yeah, and you have the evidence. It's on YouTube.
Right.
He absolutely should. I'm freaked out enough about pesticides or whatever. I don't need somebody's bodily musk on it. That's gross.
Yeah. You don't mess with people's food. Jail this man as well. Question number four. You know, we're here in fall. Feels there's a beautiful fall weekend today. Got the perfect weather for the Pats game tomorrow against the Dolphins. But it being fall, one of the things that comes with it is haunted houses, Chris. Are you into haunted houses? Oh, someone gets a scared?
It's not even that. It's just, you know, I lived in Salem for years. So haunted houses
mean more people.
took me out of my house. I couldn't even go into the city of Salem on the day of Halloween. I couldn't even get in there. I used to have to go to my parents and hang out until it was over. And also, they jack up all the prices. Oh, man, so many of you having lived in Salem, and I love Salem. Great city, by the way. Please visit it. But you're getting ripped off. If you went, like, 3 weeks earlier, same haunted house, half the price.
I'm into them, and I've always thought, ever since I was, like, a teenager, if I had, like, real FU money or I could find an investor to do this, I would want to make one where you have to sign a release before you go into it because you're about to get scared to death. And if you die, like, that's on you. You know what you're signing up for. But
you're a sick individual.
You hire people. Like, people get to grab you. They put you on a table where a bandsaw starts up. And right before the bandsaw hits your skull, like, it stops. Like, we have it down to a science. Everything stops. You're not going to die unless you have heart
issues.
I hope
you have a good custodial staff. You're going to clean up a lot.
No one would ever insure this. Believe me, I know. But I just think that people really want that scare. Like, you know, you hire someone that dress up like a monster, and then they choke you almost to death. But then their hands come off and be like, okay, you're on to the next room. Like, I think people real, there's those freaks out there, like myself, that really want the real scare, not just the, Perhaps I've said too much.
Yeah, that was deeply disturbing on a number of levels.
All right, then we'll wrap it up with this. There's Nutella-flavored M&Ms that are coming to a store near you. Now they got a million different flavored M&Ms.
Yeah.
But overall, Nutella, are you into Nutella, Chris?
No, I'm not into Nutella because I'm allergic to hazelnuts, so Nutella would kill me. So no Nutella. Anytime I go out with my wife and there's some sort of Nutella dessert, that's immediately out. And thank God for her, because normally I'm like, oh, this dessert looks good. And I don't even read what the ingredients are. I'm like, I'll have this. And she'll say, that has Nutella in it. And I'm like, oh, thanks.
See,
okay.
And at my haunted house, I could have a special room for you. You'd have to sign that release again, but it could be the Nutella room. Have a guy dressed up in the monster. Like, Nutella, Chris.
No, you have a guy. Knowing you, you probably have a guy like dunk my head in a thing of Nutella and then pull me out and then wait until the last second to administer the EpiPen as I go into apoplectic shock there.
Well, that's going to do it. We're going to wrap up the show with that. Five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. And we never saw Matt Light, even though we were down here for Matt Light.
Congratulations to Matt. Well-deserved. Yep. I hope it's a great ceremony for him today.
I think it's around 4 o'clock he's going to be inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. But I'm glad we were here anyway, here at Splitsville at Patriots Place. We will be here tomorrow for the pre- and post-game. What time do you and Beatles start tomorrow?
I believe it's 10 a.m. we're on, right back here at Splitsville. Patriots pregame. Give it a listen.
And I'll be on after the Patriots hopefully end up beating the Dolphins with Mark the Beatle Bertrand, if you want to stop
by. I'm always
by.
Conflicted when you're on, Jim, because obviously I want the Patriots to win, but it's so much more entertaining when you're angry and they lose.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately been a lot of that the last couple of weeks, so hopefully we can turn it around tomorrow. I want to thank our on-site producer, Matt McCarthy. Check out his Hardcore Baseball podcast on 98.5 Sports Up. Jim Louth for helping us get set up back at home base in Dorchester. Kristen Sermon and Mike Sarge Riley on the headlines. And for you, Chris, always a pleasure.
Hey, this was
we'll
fun.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Down here at Splitsville. That's going to do it for us. We have Kristen Arcand coming up next here on 98.5 Sports Up. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Goodbye.